might have heard that the Metallica boys were gonna play some heavy shit tonight.
All right, this is your host, Clint Wells, here with another episode of Metal Tales from the Road. I'm here with our new friend and patron, Tom Dean. How you doing, Tom?
I'm very good, thanks, Clint.
You are now my second British friend named Tom.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very popular name for British men aged around 30 to 35. I had about four of them in my class at school.
Lots of Toms. Is it short for Thomas?
It is, yeah.
Okay, right on. Well, thanks for being on the show. We're going to be talking about specifically Reading 2015 because you were one of the lucky fans that got to be on the stage with Metallica. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the band. It sounds like you're around my age, right? How old are you?
Yes, I'm 34 now.
Okay, cool. So what's your story? What's your online point with the band?
So an older cousin of mine got me into them. I'm pretty sure I was about when I was 13 or 14. I distinctly remember him being over for a New Year's. And he played me Master of Puppets, the album, and it just didn't sound like anything that was around at the time. And he gave me that on cassette and the Black album on a dubbed cassette. And I would just listen to them constantly on my way to school with my Walkman. I went to obviously a grammar school in England, so we had to wear blazers. And so my mum used to be really angry because I would rip the blazers pockets with my Walkman in it. And then at the end of school, I'd try and rewind the cassette in my pocket to get back to the start of Sandman for as soon as school finished.
There is in the southern part of the states here, there was like this, it was a commercial or a radio thing called Real American Heroes. It was like a beer commercial, and it was this sort of joke on like heroism. And that story, you wrote to us in an email, like that makes you, in my mind, like a real Metallica hero. You're in the school, you cut the hole in the nice jacket, you're secretly trying to rewind it in school. I mean, I feel like the Metallica boys would be proud.
I hope so. No, I absolutely loved them. And there was, they weren't really big amongst my group of friends. There was only one other kid I knew at school who liked Metallica. So we kind of found each other pretty quickly and would just kind of talk about it nonstop all day. Remember just drawing the logos on our books, just geeking out and trying to get everything we could. We were really lucky. We had Kerrang! Magazine, which was, I don't know what it's like now, but when I was a kid, that was absolutely brilliant. That was like your Bible. Used to buy that every week, and you just flick through. Like, they had to put all the names of the bands in bold, so it was easy. You could skim through for any little Metallica news.
What kind of music were you... So you said you heard Puppets, and it was like nothing you'd heard. What kind of music were you listening to?
Yeah, so it was really kind of the big indie scene at the time. We were kind of in the middle of the Blur and Oasis wars. So I used to like those. I had like What's the Story, Morning Glory, and the first few Blur albums on cassette as well. And they were cool, but nothing kind of hooked me.
That's like, interesting that you mentioned that. I've actually never had an opportunity to talk to a British friend about this. The whole Blur Oasis thing in the States was such a non-issue. Like over here, we just liked both bands. And Oasis was much bigger. Like, the big Blur song over here was the Woohoo song.
Yeah, song two.
But I do remember like reading rumblings of like, I guess in the UK, there was like a big rivalry between those bands.
It was. I was probably a little bit young to appreciate it. I just kind of knew that they were on TV all the time on all the music shows that we had and on the radio all the time. But I've kind of talked to friends of mine's older brothers who were maybe going to gigs at the time. And they said, yeah, it was a big, big rivalry. I think it's probably a really cool scene.
What's the and obviously this isn't a Blur or Oasis podcast, but what's the origin of the rival? Like, what was it, a publicity thing? Are those guys actually friends? I mean, what's the problem?
No. Obviously, the Gallagher brothers did anything for a little bit of media attention. So I think they would just say things all the time in the press. And it was a bit of a class war. Like, Oasis was seen as like the working class band. They were from like an inner city estate, also in the north of the country. Whereas Blur kind of represented the fancy, preppy South. And so there was this kind of people really identified with one or the other. And that led to the kind of the conflict and the rivalry.
And where are you from? Where do you grow up?
I live in London. I grew up in London, lived in London my whole life.
I was lucky enough to travel to London and work there. And it's a really beautiful, amazing place. I mean, I don't know how you feel being from there, but to visit was quite eye-opening.
I try not to take it for granted. I love it. I work quite central. I live out in the east of London, but I work quite central, so no, I love it and make the most of it. It's so cool for like gigs. We can never complain because there's like awesome bands playing pretty much every single night of the week.
Yeah, I mean, London, you're always going to get whatever show's happening, for
sure. Yeah, everyone's going to come through town.
I do appreciate the irony. You wrote to us that you're actually you're an assistant principal at a school, right?
I am, yeah.
I like thinking about you. Like, you're going to go easy on the kid that you find cutting a hole in his jacket to listen to some metal tunes. You're probably going to be you're the assistant principal they want.
I do have to tell kids off, though, because we're a bit unusual for UK schools, and we don't have a uniform. Mm-hmm. And there have been a few kids who have worn Metallica T-shirts, and when it turns out that they just bought it because they liked it and they don't actually know anything about Metallica, I do give them a pretty hard time.
Oh, my God, dude. So I've talked about that on the show. Like, my whole question is, like, hey, man, are you wearing the shirt or are you wearing the shirt?
Yeah, no, I was devastated when I've been around the shops with my wife, like in the shops that she would buy stuff in, and you see like Metallica shirts for sale and you know that people are buying them, and like Motorhead and Guns and, right. and Maiden and things like that, and you know they've no idea, they're just buying them because they think they look cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's disheartening and a bummer to see pictures of the Kardashians wearing Ride the Lightning t-shirts.
Yeah, 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 and Bieber and stuff like that.
There's a part of me that wants to shout, take it off. I do know that Justin Bieber is a Metallica fan.
Okay. I'll be very honest. I've never listened to anything he said, so I wouldn't have found out.
It's actually a pretty fascinating documentary about him. I think it's called Never Say Never, Never Say Die. It's worth checking out. Anyway, my Justin Bieber podcast launches next month.
Yeah. I look forward to that one. I'll definitely hit subscribe.
So you've been to 11 shows, is that right?
Yeah.
What was your first Metallica concert?
So my first one was Reading 2003. Kind of, I was after getting into the band. They didn't really play many shows in the UK after that. And I remember that, I think they played Milton Keynes in about 98 or 99. And there was no way my mom was letting me as a 14-year-old do the 2-and-a-bit-hour journey to Milton Keynes.
Right.
And then, obviously, all of the Some Kind of Monster drama with Jason stuff started. So, yeah, it wasn't until 2003 that I got the first opportunity when they headlined the Reading Festival. That was really one of the last good years for Reading as a whole festival weekend. There were loads of really cool bands on, like Blink-182 played that weekend. Mm-hmm. But I think Blur played, Linkin Park, lots of other really good bands, System of a Down.
So are you the type of dude that you were kind of checking it all out, or were you just trying to get like front rail for Metallica?
No, we checked out the whole weekend. So we drove down on like the Thursday, I think the Wednesday or the Thursday, me and a couple of friends from school, kind of loaded up on beer, got the tent, and then just kind of drank and watched bands all weekend. But with the headline, the highlight was always aimed for Metallica. So on the Sunday, I was like, right, I'm not having any beers. I'm staying completely sober to take in this first ever Metallica show.
And, you know, you don't want to have to go make a pee-pee or pee your pants.
Exactly. You need a very, very good beer and a toilet strategy when it comes to shows like this.
It's true. So I'm looking at the set list now. We won't spend too much time here, but there's some interesting stuff here. They open up with Battery Puppets. You got Harvester of Sorrow, Sanitarium from the Beltolls. And then I see that you actually got a performance of Frantic.
Frantic, yeah. I think I've seen Frantic 2 or maybe 3 times live somehow, because I saw them a bit later on in the Madly in Anger with you tour. And I was one of these people, obviously I know that St. Anger is not good, but mm-hmm. I think I was so desperate at the time. And I was only like 18,
right.
maybe 19 when St. Anger came out, so I wasn't super critical. I was still quite a fanboy, kind of just taking anything. So I did like St. Anger at the time. I listened to it a lot, so I tried to defend it. I looked from the bright side. And found the positives, but yeah, no, it hasn't aged well, and it doesn't get many spins now.
It is funny what time does, because when I'm looking at this set list now, and when I see Frantic, there is a part of me that's like, oh, that's kind of a treat, like that's kind of nice.
Yeah, well, the album had only come out like 2 months before, so you're expecting some new stuff.
It does say a lot that they're basically on the tour cycle for the new record, and they really only played 2 songs. I see
yeah.
that they played St. Anger also.
Yeah.
And you got No Remorse. I mean, that's a treat. That's pretty rare.
Yeah, that was awesome. I think it's the only time I've seen that. That was really cool.
Blackened, the encore, Fuel, Nothing Else Matters, Creeping Death. And you got a second encore where they played One and then Inner Sandman. That's a pretty interesting encore combo. It'd be cool to see One in an encore.
Yeah, I think that's good. At the time, I didn't really appreciate kind of how they built the sets. And obviously, you knew what to expect. And getting towards the end, you were ticking off the songs. And so you knew that you pretty much knew that One and Sandman were coming.
Right. So one of the next memorable shows that you've told me about is the September 15th, 2008, where the boys played in an arena, I guess, and they did like kind of a Death Magnetic rehearsal.
Yeah, it was so cool, because I'd heard about like back in the Cunning Stunts days that they did all the rehearsals at Earls Court.
Ah.
Which is an old venue now that's been knocked down in London. Actually, that's where I saw them on the Madly in Anger with You tour.
Okay.
Where I did get to hear Dirty Window live as well, which is
nice.
a rare treat.
Yep.
But yeah, so I couldn't believe it. I hadn't been in the fan club that many years when that came out. And yeah, you just got like an email or a message saying that they were going to play this show. If you were in the fan club, the tickets were going up at such and such a time and they were only going to be £5. So I texted a buddy immediately saying, do you want to come and see Metallica? And he was like, yeah, yeah, go on there. And I was like, and it's only £5. He was like, I am in. And so I managed to jump on there early and get the tickets.
And they didn't have any like pyro. There wasn't a lot of production, right? It was kind of a stripped down thing.
Yeah, it was kind of stripped down. There was no support. It was a DJ beforehand. And we were lucky. We were in the very front row. We couldn't get standing. We were in the front row of the seats and kind of in that arena. The seats kind of overhang quite a long way. So you're still really close to the stage. And yeah, there was kind of, I think they were just kind of working out like the stuff. Because I saw that tour again about a few months later when they came back to London. And it wasn't super different. You could see that they were on that rehearsal day, they were doing pretty much a full show. But it was a really cool set list because I think there was no Sabbath True, no Sandman, no One.
I'm looking at wow, I didn't even think about that.
Random songs.
Yeah, it looks like you got Until It Sleeps, which to me is kind of a treat. Of
that was amazing.
Man.
Yeah.
The Thing That Should Not Be.
The Cunning Stunts days to get Until It Sleeps. That was brilliant.
I really wouldn't mind seeing them bring that back. You know, everyone knows I'm a Load Reload guy, but I think everyone would enjoy that.
I'd love some of those to come back, like those ones, like the obvious ones, and then like some of the rarer ones. I think I'd lose my mind if they played something like The House That Jack Built or 2x4 or something like that.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I mean,
Ain't My Bitch. I've heard like some really cool live versions of that from like the late 90s, and
right, yeah,
it's so cool.
Okay, moving on, your notable shows. June 9th, 2012, Castle Donington, the Download Festival. You got to see the Black Album in its entirety.
Yeah.
I guess they were doing like an anniversary tour? That was like a European thing, right?
Yeah, that was a European tour. So I was determined to get the Download tickets. I actually went with my wife because she loves camping, okay. And I don't really like camping. And so I told her the only way that I'd go camping is if it was including seeing Metallica. Hmm. So that was another really good lineup. I remember on the Friday, one of the stages was headlined by Slash and Miles Kennedy,
nice.
Who I love. I think Miles Kennedy's got such an awesome voice. Then obviously it was Metallica on the Saturday with like Biffy Clyro, Tenacious D and Steel Panther, who are always like good fun at a festival when everyone's had a few beers. And then on the Sunday, it was Megadeth Soundgarden with Chris Cornell when they got back together.
Wow.
So I'd seen a Chris Cornell solo show about 10 years before, but to get to see Chris back with Soundgarden was awesome. Black Sabbath headlined on the Sunday.
Unbelievable.
But yeah, the definite highlight.
Is your wife a good sport with the heavy music? Is she like going to the shows with you and checking them out and stuff?
She doesn't come to lots, but I think after we've been together like 13 years now, so she knew that I came with a package deal with Metallica. So she's been to a few. Donington was her first one. Then she came to, we went up to Glasgow for one of the UK Hardwired tour. And then she's going to come with me to Barcelona for one of the European Stadium tours next year.
Yeah, you mentioned that you got one of the black tickets for European. Congrats
I did.
On that. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So the planning has been an expensive couple of weeks.
I bet.
So I've been booking lots of flights and hotels. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be absolutely brilliant. I can't wait.
I think it's like I said in the email, you know, it's a good time to really splurge for that because, you know, the boys are getting older. They're on a great cycle. Who knows when the next tour cycle is going to be? It's a good time to do that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So I went to three of the Worldwide shows, both the London ones and then the Glasgow one as well. It kind of coincided, luckily, with one of our school holidays. Mm. And then next year, there's quite a few in the holidays and then a few Saturdays as well. And because Europe's so easy to get around, you can easily fly out in Saturday morning,
right.
Go see the show, and fly back Sunday morning.
Right. You were at one of the enviable London shows where the boys debuted Spit Out the Bone.
I saw the debut of Spit, although I love Spit, but I got to say I was probably equally as excited the day before when in that slot they played Damage Inc.
Because
I think I'd maybe only heard that once before live.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love that song. It's so cool.
That's a treat too. Yeah, I wish that the quote-unquote thrash slot had a little more of those, like Damage Inc., throw that in there, My Apocalypse, I wouldn't mind seeing there.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that on the Death Magnetic tour. Yeah, I think that'd be cool if they kind of mix that one up a bit more because it kind of adds a little element of unpredictability
right.
towards the end of the set.
Right.
Otherwise, I think they do risk. If you get into that Sad But True, Puppets, One, Nothing Else Matters, Sandman, and if it's nearly always Spit being the only thing else in there, then, yeah, I think you like to not know exactly what's coming.
It's hard, yeah, it's hard to juggle that because, you know, for most people going, they're only going to see him once and I don't know if we're ever going to see Spit Out the Bone this often in a set.
No, after this cycle, it might be gone, but it is absolutely brilliant. Even on like the first run through, where you could see, obviously, it was a little bit rusty, a little bit shaky.
Right.
It's still so cool to see.
And I, like many fans, and maybe even you included, kind of religiously was watching the Tuning Room videos from the States. And, you know, they were working on it almost every show. They were kind of workshopping it a little bit in the Tuning Room. The thing that stands out to me on this show, the Donington show where they played the Black Album, is right before they started, and they played it in reverse, starting with Struggle Within, etc. But you got one of the, kind of, I think maybe only 16 performances of Hell and Back. Are you a Beyond Magnetic fan? Did you like that EP?
I am, yeah. I love Just a Bullet Away. I think that's a fantastic track. And so I think the only live time of that was on the 30th anniversary shows. Yep,
that's right. I'm actually doing the Alpha Metallica, I'm doing Just a Bullet Away in a few weeks with Tom
Cui.
I love that song too. I mean, I think that old EP is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I don't think I listened to it enough, because if I'm skipping through, I see Death Magnetic and I put that on.
Right.
And yeah, I do forget about the EP, but every so often I just kind of get usually a line from Just a Bullet Away in my head. I'm like, oh, gotta go burn down that whole EP now.
Tell us about what it was like to see the Black Album played that way in reverse in its entirety. I mean, obviously the gems there being God That Failed, My Friend of Misery, Struggle Within.
Yeah, those are the things I was looking forward to the most. So right. I'm sure you've probably seen, but they started off with, like, so they obviously came out, I think they came out to Hit the Lights, a couple of other tracks, then Hell and Back. And then they played like a video, maybe about 5 minutes. And it was lots of excerpts from A Year and a Half in the Life, which I've seen hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. So that kind of brought back lots of good memories of watching those when I had that on VHS. And yeah, and then I knew that they were going to play it backwards, but yeah, really looking forward to those things like Struggle and things like Wolf and Man. Obviously, you love that.
Mm-hmm.
And Don't Tread on Me.
And you were in the Snake Pit for this.
We were in the Snake Pit, yeah. So obviously we already had the tickets ages in advance and then entered the raffle, the lottery, whatever you want to call it, for the Snake Pit and got it. And so, yeah, so we were down there. We kind of went in and out. You could get in and out of the Snake Pit pretty easily. I don't know what it was like for you guys when you went to your show. Was it you who got the Snake Pit, or was that Ethan?
No, it was me. Yeah, it was really easy.
That was you.
It was
easy. Yeah, so it's really easy to go in and out. So, like, we were going down there from, like, really early in the day. And most of the time for, like, the other bands, even for Biffy Clyro, I think, who were the second to last band on, there was maybe, like, 50 to 100 people in there.
Right.
And it was, yeah, it was really weird kind of walking past all the poor guys who had been on the rail the whole day, sitting in their seats. So we could kind of go backwards and forwards, get something to eat, grab a beer. And then we kind of headed in there probably for the start of Biffy Clyro's set. And then I got a really cool spot kind of about halfway back on the rail on the side next to one of the mics that James used a lot.
Awesome.
And we got so much interaction with the band. I said to my wife, I kind of gave her my camera. And I was like, I'm not taking any photos. I'm not a big taking pictures at gigs person anyway. I'd like to enjoy it.
Right.
I was like, I'm not taking any pictures. I was like, you just kind of snap away. And she got some really cool ones. There's a great one where James is kind of looking straight at her and winking. And I told her, that wink is definitely for you. He's not winking at me or any of the other fat guys in here. He's definitely winking at the hot blonde girl.
It'd be funny if he was like, no, I am winking at you, Tom. This is a wink for Tom.
I'd be devastated if I've misread the situation. I missed my chance.
So I got the rail in the Snake Pit, my friend Brad and I, and probably not as many interactions as you got where you were, but I did. They kind of came out, and for Hardwired and Atlas, they basically stayed up front.
Right.
After that, they moved around the whole show, but I did have a few like eye contact interactions with James, and it sounds silly, but it was kind of powerful. Those moments were
it is when it's someone who you've kind of looked up to for such a long time and you've got so much respect for, and he's just like there in the flesh. It was super cool. And like Kirk was really cool, like always kind of leaning over and letting people hit his guitar.
Oh wow.
And giving high fives, and Rob's like always giving like fist bumps and high fives. So I was really surprised at how much interaction there was.
It's funny, Kirk's like, you know what, I don't want to touch your hand or anything, but I'll let you hit my guitar.
We're probably talking a bit, but like with the meet and greet and things, I always kind of got the impression that he was really standoffish and really kind of against any kind of contact. But in the very, very small number of interactions where I've been a few feet from him, he's always seemed really cool and really up for it.
Well, let's talk about that. So moving on to the Reading 2015, this is when you won the meet and greet. And so for folks out there who may not know, you know, how do you get the meet and greet? It's a drawing. It's the same kind of deal.
Hey, so I don't know how much it's changed since the fan club went kind of open for everyone, but it used to be when you paid for the fan club, which was a really good deal. It used to be like £35 a year. Mm-hmm. You get a t-shirt and like four issues of So What and some other kind of cool stuff. But yeah, you just kind of click on the online, the shows that you're going to, and you enter for the meet and greet. And then about a week beforehand, an email drops in saying you've got it. And I remember exactly where I was. I was in a pub with a few mates of mine on a Friday, kind of standing at the urinal, just idly looking at my phone, and then saw the email come in. And I just went running back out of the toilet.
Nice.
Kind of just shouting and babbling at them and showing them the email on my screen. But yeah, no, that was such an awesome moment.
So was this is after James had kind of started to bail out on the meet and greets, right?
When did he
stop doing those?
I think it was only about 3 or 4 years beforehand. I do go on the forums, try not to post too much on there because it's a bit of a weird group of people and a weird vibe sometimes. But I was kind of aware from reading on the forums that he hadn't been doing it for a while. So I was prepared. But on the day, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a sec, but I did feel terrible because there was a guy in the queue with me who just kept going on about how excited he was to meet James.
I
had to break it to him that he wasn't going to be there.
How'd he take it?
Yeah, you could see he was bummed, but I think the excitement of everything else made up for it.
I was explaining to my wife, we were talking about the meet and greets and you know how they do these experiences now where it's pretty expensive over here in the States. It's $2,500.
Yeah, it's not too dissimilar in pounds over here.
Really, the value of that, the value is really meeting James. Let's just face it, you know. So tell us about meeting the boys. So when did you get there early? Did they prep you? And what was it like? Walk us through a meet and greet for someone who hasn't done it and may never be able to do something like that.
So you get an email about a day or two in advance just saying vaguely where to meet. And obviously like a big festival site, there's so many people and so many entrances in and out that it's a bit confusing. But basically they said there'd be a guy with a big red flag and you just go over to him. And so once I found him, we only went to the festival for the day that Metallica were playing. We could drive there and back because it's not too far. So I'd left my buddies just watching some other bands and wandered over and they kind of get you in a little queue. There's only about 12 of you. So you're kind of just at a barrier. And then one of the people who must work for Metallica, he comes out and they kind of check all your names off of a register and show a little bit of ID just to prove that you are who you say you are. And then they led us through the backstage area and they kind of line you up against the wall. So it's cool just to kind of see the backstage area mm-hmm. of a festival and all the stuff that's going on there.
Right.
And they line you up against the wall and they say, right, the guys will come out one at a time. They've got somebody from the Metallica fan club who will take your phone and take pictures. They're like, please don't take videos. Please don't take phone calls from other people while you're there. They say that you can get two things signed. And they say that Kirk won't sign people's skin. and then they just leave you there for about 10, 15 minutes. And like people are wandering backwards and forwards. It was really cool. One of the nameless ghouls from Ghost had played earlier that day. Mm-hmm. And he walked past in kind of full on ghoul outfit.
Oh, wow. I was about to say, how'd you know who it was? But I guess
he was a dude in the in the big metal demon mask.
That might have even been Tobias. You never know.
It could have been. You never know. I've really got into Ghost recently. I'm so stoked for that tour next year. I went to the Royal Albert Hall show a few weeks ago, and it was
one of the best
gigs I've been to in recent years.
Are you a fan of the new record, Prequel? I still don't know if I'm saying it right.
Prequel, yep, absolutely love it. Yeah, my wife's really into that as well, so that's another reason she's keen to come to the tour next year. But no, I love all the Ghost stuff. I think they're such a cool band.
Well, I know I speak for many of us over here in the U.S. who are very jealous that you guys are getting Ghost for the opener.
When you've got Jim Brewer.
Well, you know, they're doing a very different kind of thing. You know, it's like a kind of an MC comedy thing, which I think is cool.
I'd be interested to see it. So I'm going over to Charlotte in a couple
of weeks to
see that show. So yeah, I'll definitely get along for it just to see it because it'll probably be the only chance I'll get to see him.
So who comes out first? Do they all come out together? Or how does
No, they come out one at a time. So when it was us, Kurt came out first, then Rob, and then Lars. I think it's probably the best order. You want to have Lars last because he's the most personable.
Right.
So I tried to be a bit creative because obviously the big decision before you go is what do you take to get signed?
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of going through my whole Metallica collection of just weird and stupid stuff. I've got like the action figures, loads of old pictures, obviously records. I ummed and ahed over getting some of the stuff from like in the live ship box set.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's not like the Rob era. So they bought out randomly in the fan club, like a Metallica baseball a few years back. And so I really like baseball. So I bought one of those. And so I took that along and then an old fan club t-shirt that I really liked. And so that was kind of a good conversation starter, because they were like, oh, you're English, but you like baseball. So then we were chatting about that. We were talking about the nights they do at the San Francisco Giants.
Right, right. I was going to just ask real quick, because it just dawned on me, I have no clue. What's the baseball situation over in the UK?
Oh, absolutely zero.
Just no baseball?
No professional baseball.
Wow.
No, there are some like rec leagues,
right.
People who play in the park. We're getting a couple of Yankees-Red Sox games over here next year. But no, I don't know any other British people who like baseball, sadly.
It is kind of like, I guess, like the quintessential American sport.
Yeah. I'm quite lucky. I get to travel to the States quite a bit. So I've been to quite a few baseball games and I really enjoy it. So I can watch it on TV.
For anyone who, like me, I'm not a big sports guy, but I highly recommend the Ken Burns documentary series on baseball. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
I mean, even if awesome. even if you don't follow it as much as maybe you do, just for the universal you out there, for the listener, it's an amazing like 8 or 9 part documentary.
No, it really goes in deep on some kind of the backstory, which I had no idea about, because obviously there's just no knowledge of baseball over here, so I only know what I've been able to glean from the internet and from documentaries like that.
So Rob comes out first.
Yeah, so Rob came up first. We kind of chatted about, I used to do a bit of surfing, so I was talking to him about surfing, because I think they'd just been playing in like Spain or Portugal.
Right.
So I was like, he'd been surfing down there, and he's like, yeah, I managed to get like a little bit in here and there. But he was kind of actually probably the most, I don't know, maybe a busy day, he was thinking about other things, but he was kind of the least chatty of the three.
Gotcha.
So he was super polite and like really happy, like took photos, but no, he kind of didn't really have much chat.
You know, I think those, I mean, I'm sure he's totally fine with it, but they got to be a little odd for him, because it's really the diehards that are getting back there. And
yeah,
for many diehards, their connection points predate him being in the band. And
yeah, I still always think of Jason as being the bass player. I've never seen them with Jason, I think, because I grew up and kind of those were my first memories. I still, if I think of them, it still is with Jason on bass.
I absolutely do too. Like when if you were to like conduct some sort of psychological experiment on me and just say the word Metallica, the first thing I see is Black Album era. Like that's the image I see of all four of them. I see Black Album,
Seattle 89 or Counting Stunts.
Right, exactly.
Those are kind of the two images that are burned in my brain.
So he walks through the line and, you know, signs and does pictures and then he splits. How soon before Kurt comes out? Is it immediate?
It's a few minutes. Yeah, I think they must have it down to a fine art.
Right.
So pretty much kind of as Rob is getting to the end of the line, then Kurt appears at the other end,
mm-hmm,
and starts working his way down.
And where were you at in the queue? Were you in the middle?
I was kind of in the middle. Yeah,
okay.
pretty much in the middle. So next to the poor guy who was gutted that James wasn't there. And I was next to this other really cool lady who was, I think she was seeing like her 81st or 82nd show.
Wow.
But this was the first time that she'd won meet and greet. So
she was
absolutely psyched.
You see, that's the thing is, you know, you can be a fan at that level. She's been to 80 shows and still she only got that meet and greet that was the first time.
Yeah, it's complete lottery. So she was very happy.
It really gives me a lot of perspective and makes me really grateful that I was able to do the snake pit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I did it to win kind of two things so close together, but I'm not going to argue.
So the thing that I think about when I'm imagining what it must be like to do this is when it finally comes to your time with whomever, Kirk or Rob or Lars, I feel like everyone's like watching your interaction with them.
Yeah, you do a little bit because there's nothing else to look at. You've chatted to the people next to you and they are the main focus.
Right.
So you do kind of hear and listen to other people. And like there was a girl in the queue who had like bought them all gifts, like different books about things that they liked. And she even had one for James. And Rob was like, I'll call you. I'll take that back for him. I think she'd bought him like a book on surfing and then Kirk like a book on horror.
Wow.
And so no, you do see how much it means to other people.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and it's in that way, it's communal and it kind of reinforces that it's more like a family because they're having similar connections with the music that you did. And for me, a lot of my connection with the band growing up, and maybe you feel similarly, outside of my peer group, like my buds, it did kind of feel like, I don't know, it felt really personal and almost isolated. Like I felt like I had a personal relationship with those dudes in a way because of the connection I had with the music.
Oh yeah, because I saw them every day, like coming from school,
exactly.
Got a Counting Stunts, I put in a year and a half in the life, and you'd be kind of listening to them all day, so it's a constant presence in your life, and so yeah, when they actually stood in front of you, it's just awe-inspiring.
So what did you say to Kirk?
So Kirk was really interested in the baseball, he was like, ah, where'd you get this from? And I was like, obviously, got it through the club, and he was like, oh, do you like baseball? I was like, yeah, and he was asking like what team I supported, and I supported the Giants. partly because that was the first team I saw, and then obviously the Metallica connection kind of cemented it. And I was asking him what it was like to do like the Giants Nights. He's saying how he really enjoyed it. Like, it was really cool, like, for him and James to be able to mess about on the anthem.
I like how they add the San Francisco logo to the guitars and amp cabinets too.
Yeah,
like, they really kind of make it a whole deal.
Yeah, they got it. They change everything in like the whole stadium. All the, like, the strikeout signs. They have like special caps, special hats. I went out to San Francisco just in April, and I think they just played about 3 weeks before, and they still had lots of the stuff in the store. So I've stocked up on Metallica / Giants merch.
It's cool to see that the team, if not the city, at least the team, like, really embraces Metallica as kind of
their local
band, you know?
Yeah, I went to like loads of craft breweries, and like nearly every one of them had a beer that was a pun on the Metallica name or a Metallica song.
Right.
So yeah, no, they definitely own the band, and you kind of walk around in a Metallica t-shirt and people will talk to you.
Right.
And they're definitely a Bay Area band. They love them.
Yeah.
Except this week when they complained about them playing too loud.
Oh yeah, well, they played that benefit.
Yeah, yeah, and all the locals were complaining.
They're like, look, we like you guys, but God damn it, it's loud. Turn it down.
we like you until 10 p.m.
Totally. All right, so then we get Lars, which, you know, yeah Lars is going to be, just because that's the way it is, he's going to be the, other than James, he's going to be probably the most exciting.
Yeah, he's the one that people, and he, like, he spent the longest with everybody,
right?
Probably by far, probably like at least double the amount of time. And I think that part of that is because people have so much more to say to him, but also he's just got so much to say back, being such an encyclopedia of Metallica. I remember the girl to my left who had been to all those shows, like, she was obviously reeling off her greatest hits that she'd seen, and he had something to say about every single one of those shows.
Well, it's like he has himself said, he is Metallica's number one fan.
He is. No, and he's, I think, I don't know if it's just kind of part and parcel with being in a band, but his kind of geography and knowledge was amazing, because he kind of asked everybody where they were from.
Yep.
And he had so much in-depth knowledge there as well, because he like asked where I was from. I said I was from London, and said that I work in Whitechapel, and he knew like loads about that. And now, unless you're a Jack the Ripper fan or a Cray Brothers fan, then you don't really know what Whitechapel is. And he knew that like there was a Tom Hardy movie coming out about the area soon. And yeah, he just definitely had his finger on the pulse.
No, he is, you know, constantly inspires me. He's definitely a culture vulture. And I think it has a lot to do with the way he grew up. He was able to, you know, they traveled a lot when he was a kid, and then he had a good education, and he's naturally a very curious dude. Like, I think even if he hadn't been in a band that traveled the world for his whole adult life, he'd probably still have...
He would have traveled, one way or another.
He would either be traveling, or he'd still have that kind of knowledge. And I know that even when the boys would go on a break, when the, you know, they're on a break on the Aussie tour with Puppets, he would fly to London and hang out with his manager and stuff, so...
Yeah, he seems to, like, in the Enter Night book, he seems to always be in London, whether they're playing there or not.
Yeah, I find that really interesting. And I think that, yeah, I think that's what makes him, you know, he's a cultured dude. So what did you talk to Lars about?
So I talked to Lars a little bit about the baseball, a little bit about the Giants Knights, and then a lot about London. And yeah, talking about Whitechapel and Jack the Ripper.
Oh, that's right.
The Cray brothers, these big gangsters. And yeah, we talked about some of the other shows. I said about the Donington one and being in the Snake Pit. And I was saying, like, do you think you'll ever get any of those Black Album deep cuts out again? And he was like, oh, I'll never say never. So just kind of everybody is there requesting songs. I was surprised there wasn't as many Fixers and Ronnies as I was expecting.
What were people requesting?
So it was a lot of maybe the deeper stuff from Ride and from Justice.
Gotcha.
Lots of stuff like Eye of the Beholder and Frayed Ends and Escape and things like that.
Right. Was the Tom Hardy movie, was it the movie Legend?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm a big Tom Hardy fan.
Ah, nice. Yeah, he's a cool dude.
Amazing actor. I love that movie too. I didn't know much about those gangster brothers. He was great.
Yeah,
in that.
Well, that's set kind of in the area where I work.
Okay.
There's a pub in there called the Blind Beggar, which is when he goes in and shoots someone there, and they've still got like the bullet hole in the wall.
Wow.
They're very proud of it.
Okay. Cool. So he splits, and what do they kind of immediately dismiss you guys, or?
Yeah, because it was reasonably late on. It's probably about 4 or 5 o'clock when you go in, so it's probably about half six by the time that you've finished the meet and greet, and they were on at about 8:30. So yeah, we all had to go out, and then because with the meet and greet you got two passes to be on stage. So I had the enviable decision of picking, because I was going with two friends. So I had to pick one of them and then leave one of them in the crowd. I had told them in advance, but that was not the nicest of choices.
How'd you make the choice?
I went by closest relation, so I was with a good buddy of mine and my brother-in-law. And so the brother-in-law got it.
There you go. Now, so this was a unique tour, right? Was it just this European tour where they were letting the fans on stage?
Yeah, yeah. So I think they did lots of festival shows. Like they'd done Glastonbury earlier in the summer. And yeah, I think it was just for that run, maybe for like 3 months of shows that they had people on stage.
And was it wasn't just the meet and greet winners, right? Who else was able to be on
stage?
No,
so it was meet and greet winners and they all got a plus one. And then it was a kind of separate lottery through the fan club.
Okay.
And so there's going to be like a couple of hundred more people from the fan club.
Every time I've seen just in my various YouTube rabbit holes that people like you and I and all of our listeners go in, go down almost every day.
You know it.
Every time I see those gigs, it just amazes me. I've never really investigated how to do it. Now we know. But what was that like? I mean, do you...
So it was awesome. So you kind of went back to the same place with the same guy again, all lined up, all with your plus one. He's with me. And you kind of ticked your names off a sheet again. They took us through to like a little backstage holding area. And then it was really surreal. One, they gave us all T-shirts to put on, which were like these big, stupidly oversized, baggy beige T-shirts, which they'd obviously printed super cheap recently. I think mine had like the Master of Puppets logo on and then the date at the bottom. And then this guy announces that we all have to line up and sign a contract and then get our pound. Because I think, like, technically, I'd be very honest, I did not read what I was signing. I might have signed away a kidney or my firstborn child. Mm-hmm. But basically, you signed this thing, and then they gave you a little ticket with the Reading logo on and a pound coin. So you'd basically, like, you were being, like, paid to be on stage. I have no idea if it's, like, a union thing.
Yeah, that must be.
Or what?
That must be, there must be some kind of union law that to be on, you know, like, some shows over here that are union shows. I learned this the hard way when I was a little misfit, finally playing bigger shows. But if it's a union show, you can't even touch the microphone. Like,
wow.
You can't move the monitors. And when they have a dark stage, like when there's a union break, you can't do anything on the stage. They're very particular about that over here. If they're like making you sign a contract and like officially paying you,
yeah,
then
yeah.
There must
be 1 pound.
Wow. So you still, I imagine you still have that 1 pound.
I've got that little pound, yeah, the pound, which is no longer legal because they've changed the pound coins over here in the last few years.
Right.
So I've got that, and yeah, and the little square of paper with Reading stamped on it, Reading 2015.
Did they make you wear that shirt on the stage?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's something to do with the lighting or what.
Interesting.
But yeah, they kind of had everybody in these super baggy. It was only the very, very biggest dudes who had these T-shirts, but even vaguely fit. Mine was like a dress on me.
Like a muumuu.
It was pretty much, yeah. It was like the one that Homer has when he becomes super fat.
I don't know if it was like this for you over there when you were a kid. We're about the same age. I don't know why, but when I was a kid going to concert, like I have pictures of me like going to Dave Matthews concerts, and I always bought like the extra large shirt. Did you do that when you were a kid?
I used to always buy the, I don't know if you had this in the States, but we used to have like inside the concert, the T-shirt would be like 15 or 20 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And if you went outside, like someone had printed up cheap ones for like 5 pounds.
Like a bootleg shirt.
Yeah. So I used to go to a lot of shows, and I used to always want T-shirts, and didn't have that much money. Yeah. So I used to always buy the bootleg ones from outside.
Yep, I've done that.
So and they would normally shrink about 3 sizes in the wash, so you had to buy them pretty big.
Yeah, or like the print would come off the first time you washed it. Yeah, I've did all that. I just don't know why I always wore the muumuu shirt.
I always like it now because I'm not a big guy, so when I go to the Metallica shows, I can get the small T-shirts, and they've never sold out of those. And you always hear people grumbling about how they've sold out of the XL and the XXL.
Right. Yeah,
I think it says a lot about the Metallica fan demographic now.
Well, I just think I think there's a world problem with that actually. So they get you up there, and then so you're up there during for those about to rock, you're up there for Ecstasy of Gold.
Yeah. So they led you onto the stage, and that's where it's kind of a bit of a potluck because there was plenty of space, but they kind of filled up different areas, and I'm sure you've seen in the videos, but they have like 3 main areas. One's kind of to the side by James's tech. There's a kind of a big area in the middle behind the drums, mm-hmm. and then another area over to the other side, kind of on Kirk's side. And so me and my brother-in-law, we went in the middle bit, kind of not right behind the drum kit, but kind of off to the side, kind of looking over what was going to become Lars's left shoulder, so that we could still see lots of the stage, but we're really close to the drums.
And how far away would you guess you were from Lars?
Maybe about 8 feet.
Okay, so pretty close.
There's like one guy in front of me, then the rail, or the other one, the rail, like a barrier.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, just enough space between Lars's kit and the barrier for a cameraman to go behind every now and again.
Did they give you any kind of like security briefing? Like, hey, don't murder the band. Don't stab James Hetfield.
They were like fist bumps, high fives is cool. They're like, if the band like introduce anything or kind of initiate anything, that's fine. They're like, the only thing don't do is like, don't reach around and try and take a selfie.
Mm, okay.
And so, and everyone was pretty respectful of that.
Yep.
So, those really were the only things that they said.
So the lights go down, they start playing Ecstasy. How are you feeling during that?
Oh, my head's just going 360 because you're looking out of the crowd, which is obviously so cool. I've never been stood in front of 75,000 people. Mm. And then obviously, but you've got like the Ecstasy video behind you,
right?
Which I hadn't seen in like a festival before. So because they had absolutely ginormous screens. So yeah, you just kind of backs and forwards, backs and forwards. And then out of the corner of your eye, you can see them getting ready in the wings. And yeah, I don't know what my heart was doing then, but it was absolutely pumping.
Did you feel self-conscious at all?
Not overly, because you were kind of... There was enough of a crowd around you. But also, one thing I noticed was when you're at a festival, you can see about the first row of people. And beyond that, everyone else is just a bit of a faceless blur.
Yep.
So... No, I was just so in the moment.
I do know that when I watch those videos, I do kind of hone in. Like, the people are singing with the band, and I kind of hone in on, like, oh, they got that word wrong, like a total asshole. I know I would be getting it all wrong, too.
I'm sure that was me a few times, definitely.
Are there videos, like, Met official videos of this gig? Are you, like, in it at all?
Oh, yeah. You can see me lots and lots. I'm sitting next to my brother-in-law. He's a pretty tall guy.
Look for the guy in the... Moo.
Yeah, and the beige Master of Puppets Moo. So yeah, so you see lots of me, and there are bits later on in the show where James was behind us, and like the cameraman came into our area.
Wow.
And so he's like shooting over my shoulder, so you get kind of a lot of my side of my face.
Well, let's go through the set list a little bit, because there's actually some pretty interesting stuff here. Well, first
it was
of all,
an awesome set.
They open with Fuel, which of course I love. I mean, I know you're kind of a Load Reload cat too. So
I am. I think as an opener, it's brilliant. He just comes on, and he's like, "We are Metallica. This is what we do." Boom. Straight into Fuel.
Love it.
No pyro.
No pyro
on stage.
Yeah.
Just like the kind of the piston animations. But
yeah, that would be a pretty immersive Metallica experience to they're like, yeah, you get to come on stage and we're gonna burn you up the same way James got burned in
during that would be Metallica 4D. That's kind of moving on from Through the Never.
Totally. So For Whom the Bell Tolls, Battery. You know, Battery's not a song you see at the top of the set.
No.
It's pretty cool. And then you get what thankfully setlist.com is so helpful with facts. You get King Nothing, which it says is the first performance in the UK since 1999.
Yeah, so I'd never seen that live. But yeah, no, I love that song. So I think James introduced Kirk, he was like, Kirk's going to start this one off. So that kind of narrows down a few of them. But yeah, obviously so distinctive straight away.
And Kirk kind of plays that droning. Is that what he started to play?
Wow, wow, wow. Straight in.
And you get Ride the Lightning, which is one of my favorite title tracks for sure.
And I was really surprised. There was a big, big crowd response for that one.
Really?
Like kind of when you get that first, that opening riff, there's definitely a lot of old school cats out there who are very happy to have got that.
It is interesting in a crowd like that. You know, it's a big festival crowd. Other bands played, right? So, but it seems like it was still Metallica's crowd.
Definitely. You could tell, like, from in Bells, like the crowd response for that was really, really loud. And then, yeah, kind of straight into the beginning of Ride. That's probably the surprising one, because it's not obviously an obvious festival crowd pleaser. But they was loving it. And then James doing it was so cool. His voice was awesome. And like the burning in my brain and the please God help me. And then there was a really, kind of really good with the hey bit, and the so many fists, and kind of looking out and seeing all those thousands and thousands of fists.
Let me ask you this. How are you guys hearing the show?
So not the greatest, because you're hearing it mostly through their monitors. And being 8 feet from Lars, you're getting a lot of drums, whether you wanted it or not.
So, I mean, I know they usually use in-ear monitors. They don't usually have stage wedges. So they had wedges out there?
There must have been something. And I think there was some, like, PA above us as well.
Okay, yeah. In the Snake Pit for the stadium shows last year, they had these, like, I'm sure they were super high quality, but they were really small speakers. So it was, like, clear and good, but not real. It just didn't feel like crushing the way you kind of want it to feel when you're at a Metallica show, you know.
At Donington for the Black Album tour, we were definitely getting a lot of the monitor mix, because you really noticed it changing when like different people came over.
Mm.
Like when Rob was there, it was super bass, and then when James was there, you had a lot of vocals with a bit of guitar.
You know, in some ways, that's kind of a fun way to experience a show.
It's really
different, you know. Like one of the our friend Tyler, who did one of our Metal Tales told us about. They're like experimenting with some technology where that you can fans can hear their monitor mixes.
Yeah, I heard that. That sounded really interesting. Kind of takes me back to, I don't know if you had the Cunning Stunts DVD where it was like so futuristic because you could choose right. like some of the songs. You could choose like who to watch.
Right, the camera angles. Yeah,
yeah. You could like you could ignore the Wayne Isham and just go just for James or just for Kirk.
Right. Fuck you, Wayne Isham. I'm going to direct this.
Yeah, I got this from here.
So then you get The Day That Never Comes, another kind of treat. First time performing UK since 2009.
Before that, it won't be on the set list thing, but there was like a Kirk doodle.
Oh, okay.
And he kind of ran through loads of riffs, and I kind of in my head, I couldn't keep up with them, work out what they were. But I know that he did do like Prowler by Iron Maiden.
Nice.
Which is such a cool song. Big fan of kind of the first couple of Maiden albums.
Right.
And then he went into like the Bread Fan riff, and then cool. he went off. And then James came back on to start Day That Never Comes.
Yeah, like, let's just go ahead and call that James Hetfield PP break.
Definitely. It was a lot of riffs from Kirk, so I think that was, yeah, he had plenty of time.
He's getting it in his inner. They're like, more riffs. Keep more riffs. It's a long P.
Just keep going through Garage Inc. Disc 2. Just keep going.
So then you get another reload treat, Memory Remains. A treat for me, anyway.
Oh, so cool. I went to a Wembley show in, like, 2008. I think that was the first time that I'd heard Memory Live when you have like the big crowd participation at the end.
Yep.
And that was also cool because during that song, that was the first time that James went to the ramp behind us. So in that little area behind Lars, we were probably only about three or four rows deep. And so then like James appears like about 6 feet behind you and up elevated. So you're kind of just like staring up at him very reverentially.
How about being able to see from that vantage point 75,000 people doing that big ending?
Yeah, that would be so cool. And he was kind of like, he's like choreographing it, and you got Lars kind of just gently hitting away on the cymbal.
So Into the Unforgiven, did they play like a tape? Yep. Did they do a...
Yeah, they had a tape, and then, James was kind of the acoustic on the stand. It wasn't the acoustic he used on the US Stadium tour, just kind of like a plain wood effect one.
Okay. And, you know, I remember back in like the Binge and Purge days, he would come to the back of behind the drums for Unforgiven, but did he do anything... If he kind of came back behind you guys for The Memory Remains, I guess he's probably trying to save moments like that.
Yeah, no. James spent a lot of time like on the drum riser, which was awesome because he had his back to the rest of the crowd and he was like facing us. So it was awesome to see those interactions with Lars. And,
yeah.
During loads of the songs, like all three of them would come over and they'd kind of have their back to the main crowd. And you could see they were obviously getting a lot of energy. I think they really appreciated in a festival where the front row was about 20 feet away past all the security to be able to have that connection and that energy from people so close by. So I think at any point there was one of them was kind of right in the face of the fans behind them.
Wow.
And really getting a lot from it.
Did they seem to have like a friendly kind of rapport with each other during when they were interacting with each other?
Yeah. So they're kind of all going around. I think kind of like Kurt and Rob, they were always kind of laughing back and forth, but there were some really cool moments where kind of the three guys on guitars would all be together. But you had lots of stuff between James and Lars on the drum riser.
So we get Sad But True, Turn the Page. Turn the Page, that seems like a treat at this point now, too.
Yeah, that was really good. I was gutted he didn't play the cool SG. I love that song. I love Garage Inc. It's one of the first kind of new albums from when I got into them. I remember getting it like when it was released.
Yep.
But no, I love that song. So that was a real treat.
Wherever I May Roam, One, Puppets, Fade, Seek. Anything memorable about any of those?
Fade, just because it's probably my favorite live song.
Okay.
Especially that outro, like with the whole crowd doing the outro riff and singing along.
Yep.
There's always a hair standing up moment. And then I love Seek. I used to really like it when they used to finish with Seek.
Right.
And so you had all the lights on the crowd so you can really see how far back this ginormous crowd went.
Unbelievable. Yeah, they ended with Seek for a long time, right? That was kind of a staple.
Yeah, I used to really like that. It's a good ending.
And then for the encore, you get another cover, Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah, well, they came out, they teased Leper Messiah for about 30, 45 seconds.
Wow.
And then, then James kind of came up and he said they were dedicating the next song to Cliff because he was the biggest Thin Lizzy fan.
Oh, cool.
And then kind of ripped into Whiskey. Whiskey was really big over here when it came out, I think, like, thanks to the video. The video was on, we have a Kerrang music TV channel and MTV2 that used to play like lots of hard stuff, and the Whiskey in the Jar video was just on constantly.
Right, yeah. Same over here. Yeah, that was a big video over here, too. And then, of course, what we've come to now realize is probably the way they're going to end every show from now on, Nothing Else Matters and Sandman. Did James do the big on his knees, letting the solo to Nothing Else Matters, like, feedback before doing
intro? He did, yeah. So it was really cool. He'd started that back up on the ramp behind us. So it was kind of the last time that he was super close, and I was gutted. There was kind of me and a couple of girls stood there, and he leant down. He gave both the girls next to me picks. Mm-hmm. So, but I didn't feel too bad. But then, yeah, he like, did the big, big feedback ending when he holds up the pick to the crowd, and it was one of the picks that said, like, got riff.
Nice.
And then, then went into the intro to Sandman, and you had all the fireworks, all the beach balls, which are another guy. I know it's gimmicky, but I really like that. It's a really cool visual. And again, from being on stage, seeing all those beach balls, and they got so far back into the crowd so quickly. I don't know if they released them maybe from like where the mixing desk was as well, but
right,
there were a lot of beach balls a long way back, really, really soon into the song.
I'll put my vote in the hat. I mean, I absolutely love the beach balls. I think it adds such a fun element to that, because I love like the bands like kicking them and the bands interacting
yeah.
with them, and then it's like a festival thing. It's cool.
Yeah, it just works on everything. It worked like in the little arena shows
yep.
on the Death Magnetic tour. It works yep. in the stadiums. It's just it's just funny and it's just cool. It shows they don't take things too seriously and they're just there to to have fun.
So are you still on the stage when they come out and do their thank yous and stuff? Like
we stayed till the bitter end there to drag me off of there. So they do the thank yous. Rob and Kirk came and like just gave hundreds and hundreds of picks, just kind of scattering there. I've got like three or four picks. James came over and gave like his wristbands to people. Lars was handing out drumsticks. So we were there for kind of all the thank yous and the goodbyes, and then they finally left the stage, and then the security guys kind of come and usher you off and walk you back through the meet and greet through the backstage area back into the general population.
They're like, we're gonna need those moo-moos back.
I know, you keep those.
We've got another show tomorrow.
I've got that in a drawer somewhere, never to be worn again. I wouldn't wear it out in public, but I'll always keep it as another cool memento.
What an amazing experience, dude.
Oh, it was, yes. One in a million. Like, I might win Snake Pit again. You never know. You could even have the outside chance of getting meet and greet. But the odds of them ever doing that kind of show again and then winning the chance to do it are infinitesimally small. So, no, I appreciate every minute of it.
Well, I actually don't know. Does the black ticket come with, is that Snake Pit?
No. So it's Golden Circle.
Okay.
So, because there was a big furore at first where everyone thought that it was just going to be general admittance. And we noticed that all of the stadiums on the European tour had Golden Circle. So they changed it to Golden Circle, but no automatic Snake Pit. I think the only VIP package that gets automatic Snake Pit is the Hardwired.
Okay.
Which is like the top, I think it's called Dream No More now, which is the one where you get to meet them all. There's only 12 of those per show.
Yeah, there's the All Nightmare Long, Dream No More. What's the third one?
I think it's still one of them.
The
called Unforgiven.
Shortest Straw.
Shortest Straw, that's it, yeah.
Tell me what the Golden Circle is.
So, like stadium shows, and I've noticed this a few times, because I saw Guns N' Roses in London and AC/DC with Axl Rose at the same stadium in London. It's basically where there's so you have the stage, then a standing area, then a barrier, and then another standing area.
Okay.
And the kind of entry to the Golden Circle is different for different bands. Like, some people just have it for like first come, first served.
Okay.
So that when Metallica played Wembley in 2008, Golden Circle was just for the first, say, 10,000 people who showed up, got a Golden Circle wristband, and they could get closest. But what I know Guns N' Roses, when they came over a couple of years ago, and what Metallica were doing on this tour, is basically a more expensive standing ticket.
Well, that's amazing, dude. And, I think we're going to have you maybe do one of these shows next year also. Tell us about that.
Yeah,
experience.
No, I'd be happy to. Yeah, I'm aiming for, I've got 9 guaranteed at the moment. And then I'll try and add in a few more if I can find some good flights and some good hotel deals.
That's amazing, dude. Yeah, well, I definitely can't wait to see what they pull out for there. I mean, we're still sort of on the first jaunt of what's going on over here. And you're, of course, going to be in Charlotte. We may be able to make that work, too. We might head over there for that show, so...
Yeah, it's not too far. I've done that drive before. I've done Nashville to Charlotte. It's doable.
So before we let you go, and thanks, by the way, for walking us through all that.
No problem at all. No, it's been a pleasure.
So just a few things to orient you in the Metallica family. So you said you sort of tolerated Saint Anger. Doesn't get a lot of spins, but you're okay with it?
Not anymore, no. It's a rare. If I had a super, super bad day, then maybe I would put some of it on. But yeah, things would have to be pretty bad.
What is your favorite Metallica record?
So I flip-flop. I would probably say Justice, then Black Album, then probably Load.
Wow.
Just the kind of things I've listened to the most. But just kind of get a little taste of different eras and the different styles. But no, I do love Justice, and I wouldn't want it changed. I've listened to the And Justice for Jason stuff on YouTube, and, right. and it's cool, but I just love the way. I love that super dry sound, super crunchy.
Justice, Black Album, Load is probably the most unique top three I've heard. Mine's up there though. I do Lightning Justice and then Reload.
Nice.
Which is a kind of a unique flavor. Do you have a favorite member of the band?
Oh, James. Yeah, I'm a James cat all the way. I'm sitting here next to a black and white Epiphone Explorer that was bought when I was about 18 for one reason and one reason only, and that was to look as much like James Hetfield as possible.
Nice. Very cool. Well, dude, I think that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Metal Tales series. I appreciate you being so accommodating. Tom had emailed us maybe a week or two ago, and I finally got around to answering it last night. And when he was talking about going all these shows, and I was like, shit, you want to just be on the show? And we kind of worked it out today. So I appreciate that, dude.
That's an awesome, fun way to spend an evening just talking about Metallica. Couldn't think of anything better.
And I got to say, man, thanks again for supporting us over on Patreon. Really means a lot to us. It goes a long way. It's nice to be able to talk to you in person and say thanks.
No, awesome. No, thanks to you guys. No, love the show. And yeah, look forward to it. It's a highlight of the week.
All right, dude. Well, I'm going to let you go. So thanks a lot, dude. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. No, it's been a pleasure.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Black End, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects that Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.